Imagine this. You rent a stunning, ultra-modern, luxurious apartment. Sounds good, right? I can totally picture it. Right? It has everything you could ever wish for. Underfloor heating, a giant rooftop terrace, you name it. But then there's one rather bizarre detail in your rental agreement. Ah, there's the catch. Exactly. Every time you invite friends over, your rent increases. That's quite a terrible deal. Absolutely. Invite one person, the rent goes up a few euros. But if you throw a massive house party that's a huge hit, by the end of the night, some complicated algorithm has exponentially raised your rent so much that you end up broke the next month. Ouch. Yeah, that stings. You're literally and mercilessly punished for being popular. And this is a painfully accurate depiction of how the modern web industry operates. We've all become a bit addicted to the convenience of the so-called cloud, you know? Yeah, it just sounds so appealing. The cloud. Exactly. We're renting infrastructure, but often forget that the foundation of our own house, the plumbing in the walls, is no longer ours, and the landlord sets the price based on your success.
And that brings us right to the core of what we're going to explore deeply today. We're diving into the brand new official 1.0 release of Flow. Finally, yes. This isn't just a minor update. This platform has been in active development for over 3.5 years. We've got a huge stack of documentation, architectural notes, and the actual source code in front of us. Quite a mouthful, I can imagine. And our mission today is to find out why this release fundamentally breaks away from the extreme, almost unworkable complexity of the current internet. It's really a kind of ode to elegant simplicity. Well put. We're going to dissect how Flow gives you back absolute control and ownership as a creator. We'll look at their notable decision to ban huge external code packages altogether, why writing in their syntax feels like a breath of fresh air, and how you can escape that deadly success tax. To understand why Flow 1.0 is such a radical step, we need to dive into the philosophy behind it. When analyzing the sources, you can see the makers have pointed clearly at a certain enemy. And what enemy are we talking about? The enormous, opaque layers of abstraction in modern software development.
You see, developers nowadays are building with gigantic frameworks they barely understand themselves, and they're hosting on serverless platforms. Yeah, serverless. Another fantastic marketing term, as if somewhere in a data center magic is happening without physical servers. While in reality, those servers are there. You just pay per millisecond of computing time, per database read action, and per network request. Flow's documentation aptly calls this the success tax. The success tax, indeed, exactly. If your application suddenly goes viral, your costs literally shoot through the roof. It's almost comical, if it weren't so tragic. You build a great app, it gets picked up on social media, users flood on your site, and instead of popping champagne to celebrate your victory, you're staring nervously at your cloud provider's dashboard because your infrastructure bill has shot from 10 euros to 1,000 in 1 hour. Exactly. You start panicking over your own success. And Flow completely cuts off this fear at the root. They unapologetically choose for self-hosting. Self-hosting. Back to basics. Yeah.
It may sound like a step back for some, but it's a very deliberate strategic choice for peace of mind. You install your application on a predictable fixed server. In the documentation, they recommend using something like franken.php. Wait, Franken? What? Franken.php, a super fast modern web server. The idea is you pay a fixed amount per month for a virtual machine, let's say 20 euros. Whether you get 100 or 100,000 visitors, that machine just keeps running. The line on your invoice remains a flat horizontal line. Okay, that sounds idyllic, but I do have a little bit of skepticism here, because I imagine veteran cloud architects are frowning now. Go ahead, you buy a fixed server. Great for your wallet. But what if you do hit that limit? The whole reason serverless exists is the fear that your server would implode if you suddenly got featured on national television. Without the magical auto-scaling infrastructure, won't my app just crash under its own popularity? That's exactly the doubt the cloud industry loves to instill. But if we really look at how Flow is technically built, we see that scaling isn't some kind of black magic.
We've kind of forgotten how the internet for 25 years has kept the world's biggest websites running. So how does Flow do it? Flow is completely stateless per request, so it remembers nothing from the previous visit? Exactly.
So between two visits, the server doesn't have to keep anything in memory unless it's neatly stored in the database. So if one server can't handle it anymore, instead of that magical auto-scaling per millisecond that costs you a fortune, what do? You simply add another fixed server and put a simple load balancer in front of them. Oh, a load balancer is like a virtual doorman, right? It says, you go left, you go right. Perfect comparison. That doorman neatly distributes the traffic between server 1 and server 2, and voila, you've scaled horizontally. So instead of an opaque algorithm that sneakily adds pricey servers and sends me a blind bill, I consciously add a server when I see that things are getting structurally busier. Yes, your infrastructure grows only when you decide it, giving you unparalleled peace of mind. Your architecture remains straightforward, and costs are always perfectly predictable.
But to fully guarantee that independence, Flow takes an even bigger step. Tell me more. You might have your server costs under control, but if the code on that server depends on thousands of external factors, you're still not the master of your own application. Ah, now we're getting to their zero dependency promise, right? Exactly. And honestly, when I read this part of the documentation, I thought, okay, this is just grandstanding, or at least incredibly risky. Why risky? They claim to use almost no external code, but the entire tech industry is built on reusing packages. If you look at JavaScript at NPM, you see gigantic trees of dependencies. Everyone leans on each other's open source work. Isn't it the ultimate arrogance to say, we'll just build everything ourselves? Yeah, and then you try writing your own cryptography or your own routing, and that's just asking for security holes. I totally understand the skepticism. It sounds as if they are stubbornly trying to reinvent the wheel, but if you carefully read their philosophy document, they clearly explain why they refuse to participate in that ecosystem.
The problem with those massive dependency trees is that your application unknowingly leans on, well, 5,000 little packages. Yeah, by people you've never met. Exactly, written by strangers. It only takes one package to be hacked via a so-called supply chain attack, or one frustrated developer to angrily pull their code offline, and half the internet breaks. We've seen that happen before. That's why Flow chooses radical isolation. I get the security aspect, but how far does this isolation go in practice? They surely can't have reinvented the entire modern web stack themselves. Actually, they have. Wait, really? Yeah. Flow is itself the entire stack. They've built their own CSS transpiler. They've written their own JavaScript minifier to shrink code for the browser. They even have their own engine for single-page applications. Everything is standard in the core of the platform. That's crazy. They really write and maintain everything themselves? But doesn't that put a massive maintenance burden on the creators? Why take on that pain? Because they want the framework to stay small, compact, and above all, understandable.
Their ultimate goal is for one person or a very small team to be able to hold the entire system in their head. That's pretty rare nowadays, extremely rare. No more black boxes with unknown code. If there's a bug in the CSS processing, you don't submit an issue to some external package and wait for the maintainer who might have time next year. You just dive into the Flow code yourself. Yes, it's security through transparency. The makers explicitly state they'd rather devote their innovation energy to the core of their language and developer experience than waste endless hours tying together and updating someone else's infrastructure. That's quite a fascinating way of looking at it. So you trade in the dependence on the crowd for the full transparency of one manageable system. Exactly. Speaking of the language itself, let's look at how you actually code in Flow. You write your logic in files with the extension .flow, and there's one detail that stands out when you see the examples in modern programming languages. You mean the punctuation, right? Yeah, the absence of semicolons. You see, in traditional languages like PHP or JavaScript, you're constantly dealing with punctuation.
I always compare it in my mind to driving a car with a manual transmission. How do you mean? Well, you're always busy with the mechanics. You have to end every sentence with a semicolon, or the whole thing crashes. But in .flow, that's gone. You simply press enter, and the line is done. It feels like an automatic transmission. You're only focused on steering, on your logic, like writing poetry instead of drafting a strict legal contract. That's a perfect analogy. You remove the friction. But the technical reason why this is possible in .flow immediately reveals how unconventionally this platform is built under the hood. They use what's called a line-based parser. Normally, the parser of a programming language builds an AST. Wait, an AST. We often hear those terms in these analyses. Can you quickly unpack that for us? How does that usually work?
Sure. AST stands for Abstract Syntax Tree. Normally, the compiler takes your written code and builds a huge, three-dimensional family tree in memory. A family tree of code?
Yes. The compiler analyzes the entire structure of your file, dissects exactly how each variable, function, and block are interconnected, and sets that down in memory before executing a single instruction. Sounds robust? It is. It's incredibly powerful, but requires a very heavy, complex engine. It consumes a lot of memory and processing time. And Flow simply doesn't do that. Their parser reads the .flow file simply line by line, from top to bottom. But how does the parser know when a command is finished if it's missing that whole tree structure and lacks any semicolons? Simple. A line is a statement. As soon as you press enter, the transpiler, meaning the engine that translates your .flow code to standard readable PHP code, assumes the sentence is finished. It invisibly inserts the semicolon for you. Okay, but that surely can't always go right. Sometimes you write a command that logically requires multiple lines. Think of a long list of settings or a complex mathematical formula. Does it mercilessly cut that in half too? No, the parser is smart enough for that. They work with the concept of implicit and explicit continuations. What does that mean?
Well, if your line ends with a comma or an open bracket that isn't closed on that line, the parser understands, aha, the developer isn't finished with their thought. It continues reading on the next line. That's pretty clever. And if you really want to force it with a very complex sentence, you can always manually place a backslash at the end of the line. By skipping the heavy AST abstraction layer, Flow's parser has remained incredibly lightweight. We're talking just a few hundred lines of code. A few hundred? That's nothing. In the compiler world, that's indeed really tiny. Incredibly small indeed. But you know, the devil is in the details. When you simplify mechanics so drastically, there must be a trade-off somewhere. What's the price developers pay for this extreme simplicity? You're absolutely right. The price is strictness. The language enforces a very rigid structure, and particularly in HTML views. In .flow files, you can't leave any blank lines in those views. Ouch! No blank lines? No. If you accidentally type a blank line purely to give your code some breathing room visually, that line-based parser immediately thinks, okay, this block ends here, we're done.
And then everything breaks. I know from experience that can be quite frustrating. Sometimes you just want a blank line to keep a block of code readable. You have to retrain your muscle memory when you step into this, right? It does require some discipline at first, but consider what you gain in return. Because there's no massive AST abstraction layer between your code and the actual execution, there's a crystal clear one-to-one relationship between your original .flow file and the compiled PHP code. Why is that important? That pays off big time when you make a mistake. In other major frameworks, if your application crashes in production, you often get an error message pointing to, say, line 3000 in some obscure machine-generated file nobody can understand. Yeah, the classic unreadable stack trace. Yes. But in .flow, the error message leads you unerringly back to, say, line 42 in your original .flow file. You always know immediately where the error is. You sacrifice a bit of visual freedom, but in return, you gain absolute transparency. I can see how many developers would be willing to make that trade-off. No more abstract riddles.
Now, we've talked a lot about the backend, a clean backend syntax, no NPM packages. But we live in a time where users are extremely spoiled. Yes, the bar is high. People now expect blazing fast, smooth web applications. They want buttons that respond immediately, without having to reload the whole page. How do you translate that simple, almost traditional server approach from .flow into a modern user experience? If I throw away React, Vue, and all those other heavy front-end frameworks, how do I avoid returning to the internet of 20 years ago? You know, where every mouse click results in a white screen and spinning hourglass. That's perhaps the most critical question in this analysis. And the way .flow solves it is astonishingly elegant. They introduce something in this release which they call the Apply Protocol. This builds on a fairly new concept known as server-driven frontend. Server-driven frontend? That sounds like a contradiction, an oxymoron. The frontend sits in the user's browser on their laptop, and the server is somewhere far away in a data center. How can the server directly control the browser? Let's just look at the technology behind it.
Suppose you're building an interactive to-do list. Instead of writing a super complex JavaScript application in the browser that manages the whole list and communicates with a server via an API, you stick to working within your familiar .flow file with Flow. Okay, so no API building. What do you do instead? You simply slap the async class onto your HTML form, nothing more. From that moment on, the small built-in flow.js script in the browser takes total control. And what happens then? Say when I click the button to add a new task to that list. As soon as you click, the script prevents the entire page from reloading. Instead, it quietly sends the filled-out data to the server in the background. The server, your .flow code, neatly adds the task to the database. And then the magic happens. Instead of the server sending back a whole new heavy HTML page, it quickly calculates what needs to change on screen. What does it send back then? It sends a tiny JSON package back with very specific commands. Wait, commands? So you don't send HTML anymore, but instructions? How do those look? Exactly.
They're commands like inner to replace the text in a specific HTML element, or outer to refresh an entire element, including its wrapper. Commands like class to change a button's color to green, or remove to clear an error message from the screen. Wow. Yeah, the Flow.js script in the browser receives this JSON, pinpoints the exact parts of the web page, and updates them super quickly. As a user, you experience no stutter. It fully feels like a modern single-page application, but all the brains rest securely on the server. Okay, that sounds fantastic for the developer. You avoid building separate APIs or syncing that complex state in the browser with your database. But wait a moment. Physics won't be ignored, naturally. Ah, you're talking about latency. Yeah, if I'm on my laptop here in the Netherlands and your server is, say, in New York, then the click has to travel over an undersea cable to be processed, and those JSON commands have to make their way back. Without client-side logic, like a React that locally predicts what's going to happen, doesn't my button just freeze for half a second? Doesn't that feel incredibly slow in practice?
You're touching on the exact sore point of these server-driven architectures. Latency, or the physical network delay, is a reality, and Flow doesn't break the laws of physics. If there's a 300 millisecond delay, that's just what it is. But what's crucial, what the sources emphasize, is that the payloads, those JSON commands, are extremely tiny, and parsing in the browser is so efficient, because it doesn't have to calculate a heavy shadow copy of the page, like that virtual DOM in React. Exactly, which means the actual processing time in the browser is minimal. Furthermore, the framework allows you to show visible loading states immediately. You can, for example, make a spinner on the button rotate purely via CSS as soon as the async request departs, so the user instantly knows something's happening. So it's a bit of perception management, for sure. Let's be honest, for a flashy browser game or an extremely complex app that needs to work offline, this is absolutely not the right tool.
But for 95% of the web applications we build on a daily basis, dashboards, web shops, portals, the immense savings in complexity and development time more than make up for network latency, as long as it's just a fraction of a second. That's a very practical trade-off. You essentially swap a tiny bit of theoretical perfection for an enormous boost in productivity as a creator. Yes, and let's not forget, to calculate those server-driven commands and send them back quickly, the engine on the back end needs to respond instantly. And that's where there's a fundamental problem with the language PHP, the language on which Flow runs. Because opening up the PHP hood, PHP is traditionally a so-called one-shot environment. That's totally correct. I always imagine it as a car where at every stoplight, you not only turn off the engine, but also take the key out of the ignition and unbuckle your seatbelt. As soon as the light turns green, you have to start everything up all over again. PHP loads the entire framework again for each web request, reconnects to the database, and rebuilds the environment. That costs valuable time, especially with fast, real-time applications. Exactly.
And for loading a traditional blog post, that boot-up time of, say, 20 milliseconds is negligible. But if you're working with those fast Flow async commands, or you want to enable direct communication via their Flow real-time function over WebSockets, for example, for a chat app, that startup time per message can really hurt your performance. And that's where the platform introduces an optional but fascinating component, the Flow daemon. The Flow daemon? A daemon is usually a process that continuously runs in the background. How does this specific daemon solve PHP's stoplight problem?
Does it keep the engine idling, so to speak? Exactly that metaphor. The Flow Daemon is essentially a small sidecar, a helper program written in Node that runs right alongside your PHP server. What it does is create what's called a resident worker pool. How does that work in practice? It initializes your entire PHP application once. It loads the framework into memory, establishes database connections, and instead of neatly shutting down the process after the first request, it parks those processes warm in the server's RAM. They remain there, ready to jump into action.
But wait, isn't that extremely risky in PHP? PHP is infamously known for getting nasty memory leaks if you let it run for too long, precisely because it was designed to close again immediately after use. Quite a good observation, and that's precisely where the brilliance of the Flow architecture lies. They've designed the entire core of the framework to be completely state-free between requests, and they've optimized the garbage collection, the tidy cleaning up of memory, for this resident approach. Ah, so once you trigger an action via that server-driven front-end in your browser, the daemon immediately pulls one of those warm processes from memory. There's virtually zero startup time. The request flies through your logic, sends the JSON command back to the browser, and internally, the process is promptly cleaned and ready for the next visitor. So if I got that right, when the light turns green, I can now speed off instantly. My app responds immediately to the click, and meanwhile, I can handle much heavier background tasks without the server constantly groaning under the heavy boot up work. Exactly.
And the biggest triumph here, the real cherry on top for developers working with this, is how easily you activate it. Because you might now think, okay, cool, but now I'm sure I have to maintain two versions of my code. Yes, one for my local laptop, where I want the code to reload fresh with every change so I can see my errors, and one complex version for that fast flow daemon in production. And that's just not the case. How have they avoided that? It's solely a matter of configuration. Your written .flow source code remains 100% identical. Not one comma in your logic changes, or, well, the lack of commas in this case. You develop comfortably at home with a traditional, slow, one-shot method. And as soon as you're satisfied and push it to your production server, you flick the switch to enable that flow daemon with one single setting, and it just works. The platform transitions seamlessly. So in essence, you have the ultimate clarity of a simplistic script language combined with the raw power of a heavy, memory-loaded compiled language. Wow, that is truly impressive.
So pulling together this entire web of technical information, what does this fundamentally mean for you, the listener? What we've uncovered in today's analysis is that Flow 1.0 isn't just another tool to throw onto the growing pile. It's a definitive philosophical statement. It's a kind of rebellion against the complexity that we've collectively accepted as inevitable in the tech world. We're seeing an absolute return to pure readability and complete control, the ruthless cutting away of anything that distracts. Absolutely right. From eliminating unpredictable cloud bills with self-hosting, to banning huge external packages with a zero-dependency promise, from the soothing line-based .flow syntax to the ingenious simplicity of the server-driven front-end, everything in this platform breathes one central thought. And that thought is, hand the command back to the person who builds it. You can once again fully understand the engine of your application without being dependent on a whole army of invisible mechanics. And that leads me to an observation that extends far beyond just code.
We find ourselves in a society overwhelmed by information, where we've unknowingly shackled ourselves to systems, whether digital or organizational, that have become so impenetrably deep that we've lost sight of the bigger picture. We pay, whether in time or money, a constant tax for that fragmented dependence. What we see with Flow is the brute force of simplification. Beautifully said. What if the true innovation of this moment isn't in adding yet another layer, but in the courage to relentlessly cut things away? If we dare to pare down our work processes and digital systems to the point where we can comprehend them entirely on our own, wearing your own projects or perhaps your work structures, could a relentless zero-dependency approach lift the fog and return you to fundamental peace? That is indeed a brilliant question to end this session. Sometimes the most advanced step forward is simply tidying up the mess around you and finally becoming the master in your own predictable, stable home. And with that, we've reached the end of what we plan to dissect today. Thank you so much for listening and for thinking along. Continue to question the status quo.
don't be afraid to completely rebuild the foundation at times. And we'll talk to you very soon again.